There is something comforting about this beep. Mainly because it means you are alive. But what happens when it stops? If you are lucky, some doctors and nurses will be on hand and they'll get it going again. But that doesn't mean you are magically cured. On this episode of the Oxford Sparks Big Questions podcast, we are looking at that pumper in your jumper, the heart, and asking, how do you mend a broken heart? Hello, I'm Emily Elias, and this is the show where we seek out the brightest minds at the University of Oxford, and we ask them to weigh in on those tricky questions that help us understand the world around us as we know it. And for this episode, we are off to the lab to meet a scientist who's got a lot of heart.
So I'm Nicola Smart. I'm a British Heart Foundation funded senior research fellow here at the University of Oxford. My group is interested in understanding how the heart develops in the embryo during pregnancy and how we can learn from this to regenerate injured hearts, such as after a heart attack in adults.
So why does Nicola care so much about how the heart develops as an embryo? Well, the first thing you need to understand is what happens to your heart when you have a heart attack.
A heart attack occurs when one of the coronary arteries causes a loss of blood supply to the heart muscle, and being deprived of oxygen, the muscle dies. And now, unlike liver, skin, or bones, the heart is very poorly equipped to repair itself. So instead of replacing the muscle with the damaged muscle with fresh muscle, this is replaced with a non-contractile fibrous scar. It's not unlike the scar that you might form on your skin if you cut yourself. It's composed of the same sort of collagen fibers, and those fibers, at least for a short term on the skin, are quite different to the surrounding collagen. The trouble is, heart isn't made up of collagen ordinarily. It requires muscle.
The big problem is the scar tissue. It doesn't want to behave like the muscle tissue around it. It doesn't want to contract or expand in the same way. It just puts strain on all of the surviving heart muscle to try and pick up the slack. And that makes the heart weaker over time. Plus, on top of that, the blood isn't flowing to the heart the same way it used to because some of the blood vessels have been damaged and the heart isn't getting enough oxygen. And guess what that can lead to? Yep, another heart attack.
Heart failure is an underappreciated condition, not just the scale of it, so it affects more than 500,000 people in the UK at present, but mainly the severity. So the prospects for patients with severe heart failure can be worse than with many forms of cancer. So sadly, up to a third will die within a year, and the survivors are left unable to work or to have the normal life that they previously enjoyed. I've met some of these patients, and it's terrible. Some of them are my age. I met a young mother who had not long had her children. She, of course, enjoyed playing with them, helping them to grow up, nurturing them. And suddenly she was no longer able to take them swimming, to run around with them and play in the way that they used to. And of course, the children are too young to understand that. There is no cure, there is no treatment that can regenerate the damaged muscle. So patients would typically be given a combination of drugs, beta blockers, ACE inhibitors, diuretics, to help manage the condition, prevent further deterioration, and also to help them live with the symptoms. But none of these address the fundamental deficit of the damaged muscle. So the only actual cure available at this time is heart transplantation. The trouble there is that the chronic shortage of donor hearts means that this option is only available to perhaps 100 patients every year, and we have over 500,000 living in the UK at present with heart failure.
Nicola says there's lots of scientists and researchers around the world trying to figure out another option to treat heart failure rather than just a full-on heart transplant.
So a range of different stem cell types have been investigated with varying degrees of success, mostly though really modest and rather disappointing. There are some very exciting tissue engineering approaches, so where pet muscle patches or even whole hearts are being grown in the laboratory. Obviously, an issue with these is where to source the muscle cells. The embryonic stem cells are contentious. There are issues with transplanting cells from pigs, from other species, they'll be rejected. Some, including my colleagues here in Oxford, are trying to learn from species such as the zebrafish that have a remarkable natural capacity to repair their own hearts, unbelievably. And our own approach has been based on trying to understand how the heart forms in the embryo during pregnancy, because we believe that understanding nature's own way of building a heart can teach us a lot about how we might try and repair the heart after a heart attack in the adult.
Which boils down to cell regeneration. Nicola says 20 years ago, this was thought to be impossible in the heart. So this is what Nicola and her team do in the lab. They look at an embryo, which starts out as a ball of cells. And over time, these cells get instructions on how to develop and how to specialize. For instance, how to become a heart muscle.
So this lab has some really sophisticated equipment. These are the machines that we'd use to sequence a whole genome or sequence which in mice which genes are being expressed at any time.
Nicola's trying to figure out how these instructions are communicated. What factors are at work that encourages a cell to become a heart muscle?
The heart isn't very well adapted to repair itself. It knew exactly what to do in development. It formed perfectly. But those processes throughout our childhood and early adult, healthy adulthood are not required. So they become dormant, they switch off. And those processes just aren't primed to respond appropriately in the adult heart. But we think there's scope for stimulating them in the right way to encourage them to regenerate. So the idea is that we could give back at least some of these factors in the form of a drug, maybe, to stimulate the regrowth of muscle and blood vessels using the blueprint laid down in the embryo, but to try and stimulate the heart to perform a type of DIY self-repair.
Nicola's lab is equipped with all kinds of equipment to help her team unlock the clues behind how an embryo develops. And a key component in Nicola's research? Mice embryos, which explains why she has a mini fridge filled with mice hearts.
One here. I have to find one. Sorry. Yep. Here's one in a tube. That's an adult mouse heart. So the adult mouse heart is probably about the size of a pea, maybe.
Why do you use mice?
Well, in terms of our genes, those that encode proteins and make up the proteins that make up our body, mice are 85% similar to humans. So to put that into perspective, humans are maybe 99% similar to one another. We are 95% similar to chimpanzees, but we're also 50% similar to bananas. but importantly, we know that mice are a very good model for studying most human diseases. They're not perfect, but they're probably one of the best tools we have available. So we know from screening patients that the genes that are found to associate with congenital heart defects or coronary artery disease, if we mutate the equivalent gene in mice, the mice will display very similar symptoms, or we would call it a phenotype, that accurately models the same condition in patients. So although they're not perfect, given that we can't experiment on human beings, they're one of the best available tools, the models available to us.
And so far, Nicola's team has had some success. About 7 years ago, they found a factor that can help stimulate growth on the outer layer of the heart. And while it worked, it didn't work enough.
We could see improved cardiac function, but it wasn't really good enough. So if you think that maybe 1 billion heart muscle cells are lost after a heart attack, replacing a few hundred is just not enough. So it's exciting because compared with other treatments, it looks very promising, but it just isn't enough yet.
So it was a break, but not the big break that Nicola's looking for. But she thinks she's heading in the right direction.
So only in maybe the last 5 years, we've We've developed a better understanding of the processes that occur in the embryo to build the coronary vessels. So which cells give rise to the coronary vessels, and what are the signals that drive that process? And it's only really in the last year, maybe, that we've recognized that the adult mammalian heart, so the mouse heart, attempts to use those same processes to repair the blood vessels damaged after a heart attack. The trouble is it does it very poorly. And so we think a closer comparison between the embryo and the adult might allow us to tease out the processes that should be activated to promote a better, more efficient repair in the adult.
And while Nicola tries to hone in on the differences between the developing embryo heart and the repairing adult heart, she might get a little more insight as she moves into a new building on campus, the Institute of Developmental and Regenerative Medicine, or the IDRM. Don't get the moving boxes just yet. The building is still 2 years away, but it puts experts that study different parts of regenerative medicine, like the brain, the nervous system, and, yes, the heart, all under one roof.
So the brain and the nervous system are just as challenging as the heart to regenerate. There are major difficulties. The neuroscientists have been focusing on this for decades. There's a lot that we can learn from them, and similarly they could learn from us. What we also know is that a major barrier to efficient regeneration and repair is the body's own immune system. There are really powerful inflammatory responses that promote scarring, but actually block the processes of, say, muscle regeneration and nerve repair. And so rather than competing with the immune response, we feel that if we understand and moderate it in such a way that is perhaps beneficial for repair, that the overall regeneration achieved could be infinitely better. So the idea now of the IDRM is to bring together world-leading neuroscientists, cardiovascular biologists, and immunologists co-located in one center to focus on the major health problems that face us today. We would come together, we would discuss over coffee perhaps an idea that could lead to the next breakthrough. That just wouldn't happen if you had to schedule a meeting by Skype or wait until you're at a conference with those people.
And maybe one day they will have that breakthrough and be able to mend all the broken hearts. This podcast was brought to you by Oxford Sparks from the University of Oxford, with music by John Lyons, and a special thanks to Dr. Nicola Smart. Tell us what you think about this podcast. You can go to Twitter and tweet at Oxford Sparks. You can find us on Facebook. And of course, we've got lots of other cool stuff on the website, oxfordsparks.ox.ac.uk. I'm Emily Elias. Bye for now.